You're listening to Around Comics, episode 118. Thanks for listening to Around Comics, the comic book roundtable. I'm Sal, your host for this episode. I'd like to thank you for joining us. If this is your first time listening, Around Comics is a roundtable show featuring a revolving panel of guests talking about comic books and graphic novels. We release two shows a week. Our Monday episodes feature news, commentary, reviews, and previews of upcoming books. Our Thursday episodes, like this one, are usually either an interview or some type of comic book professional or a topic discussion. This episode, we're talking about how to draw a comic, from script to printed page, what goes into the craft behind the comic book production. To help us out, we have with us today two comic book professionals, Scotty Young, artist of Marvel's new X-Men and cover artist of Cable and Deadpool. Hi, Scotty.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Mike Norton, co-creator of Gravity and artist of DC's all-new Atom.
Could you say all that stuff again? I couldn't hear any of that.
I could, if you'd like.
Mike's in a separate room.
They keep me caged.
He's sitting on bars like a werewolf.
Once the sun sets, Norton turns. Yeah.
And as always, we also have Tom Caters with us.
You need to read the thing.
I need to read the... Oh, I'm sorry. What did I say? Oh, last but not least, the man that puts the funny in funny books.
And the sad in sad books.
And the Tom, S in sex.
Tom Caters.
I put the X in sex.
X in sex. That's what I meant.
As you're probably
thinking, S in sex. What the hell?
If you're
outed myself as not knowing anything about KISS.
If you're a returning listener, you'll probably notice that Chris is not here this week.
He's
off.
I ate him. I was so hungry.
He's off at a wedding or something.
He's at a 2-day wedding.
Well,
is
before
it like when a marathon.
Yeah, it was
24-hour wedding.
It's like it's like 50 couples get married.
Couples and they vote.
Are you kidding?
One of the couples gets voted out every 8 hours at the end.
Wow. You know the wife is really pissed off because the husband scheduled the wedding, but they meant to do it on 7/7/7. And now it's already passed, and the wife's probably pretty pissed.
Now the magic is gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're not a fan of numerology?
Yeah.
No, not at all.
But I know who is a fan of numerology.
Who's that?
The sponsors of this episode, InStockTrades.com. Winning for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 ship free. Whether you're buying an absolute edition or catching up with showcases and essentials, InStockTrades.com is your new best friend and your girlfriend or wife's worst enemy.
And I'd like to remind everyone that Around Comics is recorded every Friday night at around 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you.
And swear in front of your baby. Seems to be what we do.
Do best. All right. Well, originally, the idea of this was a Comics 101, how to draw a comic. And we put it out on the forum, and we got so many responses on the forum, so many great questions, that I think we're just going to kind of just start with the questions and see where it leads us, because otherwise we will be here
it's
all
a bit like
friggin'
asking
night.
Rumpelstiltskin how he weaves his gold.
Magic.
From straw.
I think it'll be... from straw. What's it say in the story? I think reading the questions, we'll be able to take off from
there, and it'll go wherever we decide.
There's a lot of questions. Yeah.
There were a lot of questions, and instead of trying to jam in, like, an interview and the questions, I think we'll get a lot of the responses we're looking for just straight out of the questions. So me and Tom will ask you guys the questions, and you can just go back and forth and answer them as they appear.
I didn't know this was going to be a test.
It's like a debate. You'll have 30 seconds to rebut.
I can rebut Scotty. Scotty's completely wrong. That's not how you draw a comic book.
If you've ever drawn a comic book, raise your hand. We'll do it like actual political debates nowadays.
All right, let's start. Our first post is from G-Dog, and his question is, why does it take some people over a year to draw a comic? And, that question initially sounds like... it's obviously a snarky sort of thing, but...
I've had comics that took me a year to draw, so I can't really answer. I can answer the question.
While so many books are put out on a monthly schedule, why does it seem like some books or some artists or some projects, for whatever reason, take so much longer to get done? Even from guys that seem to have a good track record, all of a sudden something comes up or from your guys' experience, what would you say is most common why that it seems to happen?
I can't speak for anybody in particular, it just seems to me, at least in my case, and it does, it seems that logically if they're referring to, high profile books that are late, it's a matter of priorities. And, for me, I did a book for Image called The Nightclub,
mm-hmm.
and it took me almost a year to get the last two books out, and I didn't even end up drawing them. I had other people draw them for me. So, but that was a matter of, I had work that I had to do for Marvel and DC at the time, and I figure if I'm going to sacrifice a project, I'll do my own project, sacrifice it.
Right.
And do the other books on time. I figure with other, artists, it's just like, most of the people that that tend to be called to the carpet for being late are pretty high-profile creators. They have lots of other stuff that they obviously would rather be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just a matter of priorities and stuff like that.
Right. I think that's all wrong. But
son of a bitch,
I beat you to it, Norton. No, while that's all right, I think also like Mike was saying with the high profile artists, sometimes they want a year to do a book, and mm-hmm. they will get a year to do a book. The Joe Mad Ultimate stuff was announced 2 years ago at Wizard World Chicago, and he's still working on the second issue or just finishing the second issue or whatever. But I think it's something I wish I could get a year to work on a book, but I think I almost wish the question would be specific about what books, because I'm sure he has a book or two in mind. Yeah. Sometimes the company switches their priority from, we'd rather you be working on this title than this title, because right. this title's making us more money, or this title's important at the moment. Mm-hmm. Or it could just be the creator has that kind of juice that says, I want a year to work on a book.
Right.
I brought up the European books before, where a year is standard of working on a book.
Well, I think, and that's kind of what I...
People don't realize how a month to draw
not,
a book,
right,
that's
not a
really
lot of time.
Hard.
Yeah.
You're never seeing people's A game in 22 days.
Yeah, well, that's sort of what I was wondering. It's like, how much are you guys sacrificing... just to get stuff done. Uh-huh. In your own art, how much, and I'm sure it's something that you deal with every month, that it's like you wish you had more time. You wish, you're at the mercy of...
Oh, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, there's daily sacrifice far as creating a 22-page monthly comic book.
Mm. It's really hard. In a perfect world, I'd like to be able to have four layouts of every page to choose from and mix and match the best panels to tell the best story, but it's just not the way. The speed, drawing a comic book on a monthly basis, you have to do the best you can with the shortest amount of time possible. Mm-hmm. So
that's really the key to it.
Yeah. When you see 3 o'clock on, when you're working and it's 3 o'clock, you realize over half your day is gone. Then and you have to go, well, this is what.
Would you guys say at any time you were not in a crunch?
Yeah. I have been.
I was once. I've lived most of my adult life under
time constraints. And it's like a lot of times I think fans don't realize that. And then, sort of
look at the fact that sometimes real life comes into it too.
Oh, God,
You know, I mean, whether it's family or whatever, something out, you know, external that can throw you off that schedule, and if you're already under such tight time constraints for something to come out, you know, out of left field, it has to just wreak havoc on it.
I was sort of wondering, how long did it take you almost to... I imagine it's sort of a balancing act as you guys work more and more of, like, learning what you're willing to sacrifice to, like, it's a balance between how you want it to be and time. Mm-hmm. Like, is that a skill set that maybe people don't realize is, like, learning how
to... It's definitely a skill set. It's something that people that are trying to get in need to learn that real quick, because it's gonna stop you.
Yeah.
You won't get stuff done.
Right.
And you need to learn how to balance what looks good and what looks good enough.
Yeah. There really comes a point. I know the first couple years that I was in the industry, I was just learning. Not only was I learning how to deal with deadlines and drawing books on a fast schedule, but I was learning how to draw, period. You know what I mean? Just never having drawn a comic book before, I did my first Marvel comic book. So I'm literally learning how to do the job on the job. So I would work 13, 14-hour days every day simply because I was trying to figure it out. Now it's a little easier, but, yeah, you do get to that point where you have to go in every day and go, this is the amount of time I have. I'm going to have to sacrifice this. And you do put together that skill set to tell the good story. And sometimes it's just deciding, do I want this to look like an amazing masterpiece, or do I want this to just tell a great story? It took me a long time to realize how long people stay on one panel mm-hmm. when reading a comic book. As an artist, we hope that you spend a half hour per panel. Yeah.
Sometimes. Going,
oh, look at that little rock he put in the background. But sooner or later, you finally get to a point where you realize, I've only got enough time to do the most important part of this and move on.
Yeah.
And I don't think fans sometimes remember that. You know.
Well, that is a good segue into the next question.
Let's see.
Which is from David D., who writes, what are some of the most common misperceptions or assumptions of readers, perhaps like myself, who have never attempted to create comic art for publication? You know, I guess things that you see people say are like...
It's hard.
Mm.
No, I don't know. Let me see. Misperceptions.
Well, I'll ask the second question.
Well, no, I think for the one thing is that for me, I mean, I can't blanket all comic book creators, but I know for me, because it is art as well, and for me, art involves a lot of experimenting and having fun with putting lines down on paper. I think for fans, sometimes they forget that we don't love everything that we put out either. You know what I mean? Like, because there's that time, going back to the last, then there's a certain amount of time. I might try something, and I might see a lot of criticism out there for it, and then I go, yeah, they're right, because I think the same thing, right? Because I tried something, I know it didn't work, but a lot of people, you know, a lot of fans aren't ever on our side when we know, like, our experiment didn't work out, we'll have to try it better next time. That's one little one that's more creative than it is.
Right.
The perception that, like, everything you put out is your
is what
A-game.
We intended, yeah. I mean, sometimes what we intend, we don't get anywhere close, whether it be because of time or... We didn't have time to learn what we were trying to attempt. I mean, that's one thing. The monthly thing is something that people just don't understand how fast that is.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, it's really hard
drawings,
to
hundreds
do
of drawings.
A book.
Well, the second part of David D's question is, as Mike is working for DC and Scotty for Marvel, is there any house rules that affect the way that each of them approach the page regarding who each of them is working for?
I'm not exactly sure what that means. Like, should I draw a certain way or something like that?
I guess,
you
I
mean?
Think that's what they call it. Or like some weird rule, like...
Well, there actually is a rule in DC now about splash pages. I think they all have to have a splash page, the first page now.
Well, I think that's what he means, like...
Yeah,
you know,
but I mean, that really doesn't... That affects the the writer more than it does
me. Yeah.
Because they got to figure out how to tell their story. But, I mean, there's nobody tells me.
Now like, Hank is looking through all the DC books to see if they'll have splash changes.
But it's nothing like we like 9-panel grids.
Right.
Don't break out of the panel borders.
Yeah, nothing like
they
that.
Want artists to be artists most of the time.
Right.
I do notice there tend to be house styles sometimes.
Yeah.
But that kind of that comes and goes too because you always have exceptions
to
that.
That's a lot of editors picking, you know,
well,
the preference
you
of what
you
they
can,
like. Yeah.
You can tell when certain editors are in charge of something mm-hmm. because they have their own certain tastes,
right.
You know. So.
Well, just like readers have their own tastes, you know. Obviously.
Well, readers have their own tastes, but you mean they're that it's sort of it's they drive the market, but also the personal preference of the people in charge also.
Yeah, I mean, just like how you might like a certain thing, editors are the same.
Yeah,
right? They're
the going to
like a certain style, so they're going to pick people that follow that
absolutely.
Certain style. To
right.
do things like that.
All right, our next question is from Chad. He said, and I think this is directed to Scotty, when drawing a book like X-Men, well, I guess it doesn't matter. Both of you guys have done
historical characters.
Yeah. When drawing a book like X-Men with such a vast history, what reference information do you use for these well-known characters? Does Marvel or DC supply you, or do you have your own reference library? Does the publisher limit you altering existing costumes, buildings, vehicles, etc.?
I'm just gonna on all these questions. Because I don't want to have to keep saying it, but this is me.
Oh yeah.
Because I don't want anybody to think this is how all comic book artists think or anything.
We just want a day. We want to be inside.
Stop
your
talking
skin for
me, Scotty.
Yeah. We want to be inside Scotty's for
but,
one day, or even an hour.
You'll see a lot of cool internet porn. Sweet
porn.
Bookworm
lots
bitches.
Of lonely days.
But no. For me, I want just enough reference. For me to understand the world and the characters, I actually, when I started New X-Men, before I started on Pages, I actually wanted to, I talked with the writer for a while, and I wanted more of a history of the characters, like where they're from, what's their each of their hometowns, what kind of family life do they have, things like that for me help decide shape of characters and things like that. But as far as, I'm one that... Sometimes people love it or hate it, but I'll change the look of a character.
Yeah, you go in and redesign.
Yeah. I'll go in and redesign it to fit what I think the character should be.
Right.
Now, sometimes Marvel doesn't go for that, and that's fine. But I always overcompensate to what I think because we can always scale back from there. If I play it too safe, then I can't get bigger later. Mm-hmm. I can always scale down from big. But so I like just enough reference for me to understand the characters. And Marvel usually is pretty good with sending, you know, all types of reference. And then I always like to work really close with the writers for stuff like that.
Mike?
Kind of the opposite.
Oh.
I need to know pretty much everything that happened up to that point. Because I want to make sure that I didn't draw this guy completely different than how he appeared 2 months earlier or something like that.
Right.
So I want to know. And I had a hard time getting, for instance, when I worked on New X-Men, I had a hard time getting reference for stuff.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't
did you ever talk to Chris?
Chris?
The writer, Chris Yost?
I never actually talked to Chris Yost.
He is, like, usually I go to Marvel for reference. I don't anymore. I just go to him.
Oh, well,
I think
see,
he has,
if
like,
I had
a
known
scan
that.
Of... I think he literally has a scan of every panel.
If I had known that, then I would have done that.
It's crazy.
Do you think any of it is, like, a function of your styles of, like, art? Like, some people are going to need to reference closer.
Well, definitely. I mean, like we just said, he'll go in there and redesign. And I'm more of a, I like the challenge of stepping in. And, I mean, I've done so many fill-ins in my career that it's just like, I like the challenge of going in and learning about a new project and becoming part of that. And then... For however long I'm part of it, then I'll leave. But I had never read New X-Men before I worked on it, and I went back and read a bunch of it, and it's like, hey, I actually kind of like this book.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
And then I only did the one issue, but there was pretty much every character that's ever been in the book was in that issue.
Right.
So it was kind of a nightmare to do in that kind of way. So
yeah,
I think it just comes down to. What your goal as an artist is, it's sometimes it's a balancing act between what you need to do to serve the book, but also serve yourself as an artist. When I mean, there are people who do too much of one or the other. Sometimes I might be guilty of
serving myself too much. And I know when I'm doing that, and I always try to correct it later. But, yeah, sometimes it's just, can I serve the what the book needs, but also take it to a new place? Sometimes you get on a book, and it doesn't need to have that because it's already where it
That's
should
true.
Be. I mean, for me, with New X-Men, for example, I felt that I wanted to get in there and take the kids to – I mean, A, they're kids, and I always felt that they were drawn to look, you know, about 10 or 15 years older. I mean, a lot of these characters were 14 and 15 years old. I mean, X-23, for example, is
only she's 13 or 14.
She's like 14 years old, and if you look at her in the majority of New X-Men books, I mean...
She looks like she's 22.
Yeah, I mean, huge, you know, just not...
Stripper.
Yeah.
Well, it's that age that all characters seem to be.
Yeah, yeah. They're all drawn in. And, and so that was my biggest... I thought, so for me, in that instance, not only did I get to redesign the characters to serve myself to have fun, but it also, I think, served the benefit of the book to take... the situations of these books and make them even heavier by putting younger looking characters in heavier situations. So the book actually to me got served a little, no, I'm not saying that I draw better than anybody else, but just the fact that they look a little younger, I think serves the stories and what the goals of the stories are.
This is Richard Starkings, and I'm just here to say that 9 out of 10 Elephant Men prefer to listen to Around Comics.
When you're, say, starting a new project and it's a new writer that's coming on the book also, do you, I mean, do you talk with the writer to try and develop that that idea behind it before? You know what I mean? And like, you know, if someone's new is coming on, new X-Men, new writer, and it's like, while there's been stories before that, that writer's going to have their own idea of what the tone of the story is going to be. Do you work with them to try and, you know, develop, and does that go into your process then with maybe redesigning the characters or, you know, giving them the look or whatever? How much of that is involved before you sort of start on it? Do you even have the time to?
I think, for me... New X-Men, for example, was already a book that, you know, it had been going for a couple of years, or, well, you know, 4 or 5 years with all the different incarnations that it's taken, or titles it's taken over the years. But for me, it was, I didn't get on the phone with the writer, really, and talk about the direction. The book already had its direction, but the most I did was ask about, so I can understand, when I draw a character, do I want to put facial expressions. So what kind of expressions should a Noli have, for example? That's the important stuff for me. The writer has the idea for the tone.
You do like more one-on-one with the writers, though.
Oh, absolutely.
You do talk to them.
I love... Actually, I there was a project that I worked on where I didn't talk to the writer at all, and I was miserable the whole time because...
New Warriors?
No, New Warriors.
Zeb Wells sucks.
New Warriors was...
You hear me, Zeb? I'm coming for you, Zeb.
I'm coming for you, Z Unit.
Zeb. He was the one screaming for help. Yeah, in
the it was Zeb.
Somebody help me!
No, New Warriors was the first time that I got the chance to... I mean, Zeb and I were equal parts in every part of that book, from he and I on the phone pitching it. We pitched that whole story idea together. So that was my first chance at Marvel to really sit with a friend of mine. And Zeb and I were already friends for years before that. So to sit on the phone, bounce ideas back and forth, come up with an idea together, pitch it together, and work on every issue together. So before each issue started, we would sit on the phone and decide what we wanted to do with it. And I love doing that. A, because I like the writing aspect of it as well. I love drawing, but I also love to tell a story.
Right.
I think the story is the most important part. That's probably why I like drawing them so much. But so that was a blast for me. But I like to be very hands-on
with
talking with the writer. And I will be the first one to that's why I like to get close with Chris, and I have become pretty close. So I feel very comfortable.
You moved in with him.
Yeah.
He gives me charity.
He touches me really good.
He went camping for a week in the mountains with
So, what,
what's up with New X-Men?
Mike, but, your approach to that? Or, yeah,
you're
rebuttal.
You're wrong, Scotty. Yet again.
It's an assembly line.
Well, this is we're going to see a lot of you and me.
I did say before this that Mike and I, while being very close friends, are very, very
different.
We are
very different.
That's good.
Yeah. I have huge balls, but...
Let's not turn this into a contest now.
Marvel versus DC.
Who's got bigger balls?
Historically, I really haven't had that much contact with writers of mine. I mean, it's about half and half, but I've done a lot of books, and just the nature of the stuff I've worked on, I tend to be the last minute man, mm-hmm. where just, you know, the whole situation involving the issues I work on, it's not possible for me to talk to the writer.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, I email a lot, but I don't get on the phone a lot. But that may have to do with the fact that I hate to talk on the phone. I've talked to Gail. I talked to Sean McKeever is one of my best friends.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's differences there.
Mm. But a fill-in issue,
doing one
or,
issue
right,
of
yeah,
something.
You're not gonna...
I didn't talk to like Chris Yost. I didn't talk to him at all.
Right.
I did talk to Keith Giffen when I worked on Howling Commandos, which was actually really cool. But that's not the norm.
So, right.
I mean, I do talk to people when it's like something. If it's important and the writer, I mean, especially if they've been in the business longer than I have. They know, well, I'm going to get something. I got to get something across to this artist. So mm-hmm. they'll call me. And they know that's cool because I want that to happen. But I'll also at the same time, I want them to know they don't need to bother with it.
Right.
I pride myself on being able to take that script and doing what they want.
I'm actually so much more the opposite that I did the 11 page story I did for Free Comic Book Day, 11 pages of the Astonishing X-Men Runaways, never to be revisited again. I think Brian and I talked every day almost about it. Brian Vaughn.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny because I didn't meet him until after I did my Runaways.
No, yeah, no,
you'll
that's
watching,
amazing.
You'll be watching Friday Night Lights at the same time.
Because I turned in my first pages for that, and he wrote me right away. It was like, oh, these look great, and he gave me his number. It was like, if you have any questions, and I actually had an idea for like just a location change to make it a little bit more visually exciting.
He said, fuck you.
I called him up and I threw the idea at him. And at first he was like, we talked about it.
Shut up, artist.
He goes, well, what do you and then he wanted me to explain a little bit more. And I explained a little bit more. And he was like, oh, that could be cool. Yeah, if you want to, go ahead. And so like I talked him into it. And then when he said, go ahead, I just kept it his way. I just decided.
You just like, wanted that satisfaction.
Well, I had the idea.
I talked the writer into it.
Well, here's what it was, I had the idea. I thought it would be cool, and then the more I thought about it, it'd be much harder. And it was one of those things where I didn't have a lot of time, so I actually needed to go. We'll take it. And his way was good. It was not either or. It was basically a place. I wanted to just take it from the street level to the subway level so I could draw cooler stuff.
He's like, open up that issue of Runaways I sent you for reference. Is there space underneath the writer beneath my name? No,
well,
I'm the writer.
It brings up a good thing that we probably should have said to begin with, but there's no right or wrong way for any of the stuff that you know what I mean? Well, I mean, certain things, certainly, but when it comes to an artistic...
You can't ink first.
Yeah.
I mean...
But I mean, everyone of you guys probably do things. I mean, you guys both know a lot of different comic artists, and I'm sure you guys all do things completely different.
I'll do different things from month to month. I mean,
I've done
four issues of New X-Men. I swear every issue has been a different process.
Well, different from month to month, but John Sokol asks, what's a typical day like, if there's such a thing?
You have more of a schedule than I do.
I've gotten one. I mean, like I said, the first couple years, it
tai
was just
chi in the morning.
It was wake up, jerk off,
taekwondo.
That's changed.
It used to be wake up, sit down. A couple buddies, Greg Titus, a couple other guys would come over. We'd draw all day into the middle of the night every day. We just had no lives. But over the last maybe 3 years, I've
that's my life without the friends coming over.
For me, over the last 3 years, though, I've made it a point to get up early, go to the gym, come back home, start work, and try to be done by 5 or 6. And that's pretty much what I do every day. Now, sometimes, and try to take the weekends off as well. I mean, I try my best to schedule it out. Now, sometimes, like right now, my books are pretty quickly being done, so there's no really weekends. But I try to make it
place in white rooms.
Yeah, just no sound, no anything. But I try to make it as because, you know, I have other people in my life, friends and my girlfriend, who have normal schedules, and if I want to be a part of that in any way, I've got to let go of that desire to just sit in front of that, you know, desk all day long, which I would do if I didn't have anybody else around, because I love it.
Norton?
I don't have the off switch. Oh. I do sit in front of
you. You're drawing right now.
Yeah, right now. As we're talking, please leave me alone, right? Yeah. No, I get up in the morning fairly early, and I draw, take the dog out, go running, come back, and I draw for the rest of the day and night.
What time do you usually stop?
Yeah, I don't know.
When he falls asleep?
Well, I mean, actually, it's been really good most of this year right now. I've kind of gotten to a schedule where I'll stop at like 5 or 6.
Right.
Now I'm doing 2 books right now at the same time, so
we already talked about this off mic earlier.
Yeah, I know.
We convinced each other to not complain about what our weeks have been like.
I him saying I'm drawing right now probably,
So,
I'm kind of, I get, you could use the word workaholic, because I mean I have to be told not to work. I mean, at the beginning, that it was actually a good thing, because that kind of mentality gets you ahead in this business. But now it's kind of like, I wish I could go out and have fun.
Right.
But yeah, I tend to be a little more workaholic.
When your project is done, how do you get your next job? Is John's next question. What's that process like? I mean,
well, that's going to be different for everybody.
I think everybody begs a little bit.
A little bit. With cups.
They beg a little bit differently. Everyone begs in a different way.
That's the perfect way of putting it. Everyone begs in a different way.
Well, Mike and I are both exclusive, so at our company, so
much less invested in terms right now.
Yeah, so we do less begging, and there's still begging, I think, involved in
yes,
the exclusive
totally,
contract.
Yes,
but, you do less begging under the exclusive, but even before that, it really just came down to, you know, usually I know I have a relationship with a couple editors that I've worked with that I really enjoy working with, and a couple writers, and usually it's just a matter of, sometimes you get lucky and a project comes up and your name gets thrown in the mix for it, or like New Warriors, sit down with a writer friend and an editor and you put some pitches through. I mean, Zeb and I have put maybe 6 or 7 pitches through, and New Warriors came out and we've got.
Your record's not that good, is it?
It's terrible.
Terrible. Has
the
skateboard been a problem?
Yeah, it's been the bane of my life, but. Yeah, it's the next job thing. It's all over the place. But I mean, once you've been there for a little while, it's usually your name's up there floating around for some project.
Hopefully.
His next question is: how do you start a blank page? Say the script calls for a certain number of panels. Do you usually follow that? What do you draw first? The concept of a blank page seems
questions there
intimidating to me. Do you visualize the image first?
Do you pray?
Do you pray for your artistic?
You want me to go first? I'll go first.
Go ahead, buddy.
Which question do I take first? How do you start the blank page? I don't start the blank page. I get a script. This is how I do it. I get a script. Usually it's a full script, thank God. Hopefully it's not 5 pages of script. And I sit there and I read it, just like I would read any comic book, and I sit there and I think about it like it's a movie playing in my head as I'm reading it, right? Read it the one time, then I go through it again, and I mark off, you know, I'm just drawing little things about, you know, what's this panel going to look like, what's this panel going to look like. Then I go and I do layout. So I never start with a blank page. I did that. I used to do that when I was doing a Teen Titans Go for Johnny DC, because... it was more energetic if I just didn't know what I was doing before I got to the page.
Mm-hmm.
But you get a lot more mistakes that way because you don't know where you're going.
Right.
You know, it's just like you ever try and just do a sketch, you're going to – that's why sketchbooks are sketchbooks. That's where you make mistakes, you know.
Right.
It's just like – and So I end up doing layouts and stuff first. So, I mean, and I'm usually pretty faithful with scripts. If it says, you know, panel one, panel two, panel three, I usually go out of my way to try and do what the writer asked for. Because usually, I mean, if they're a good writer, there's no real reason to, you know,
change it,
go off a script. But sometimes you have to. I've had really good writers that, you know, just didn't get the idea of more than one action happening in one panel can't happen, you know?
So, like from an airplane, you could see someone on the ground, but their expression, you know, they describe like their expression from an airplane.
And, they run and pick up a gun.
Yeah.
In the same panel.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And what's the other question on here?
What do you start with first?
Yeah. I just sit there and I read it. And I do visualize it like it's a movie, and then I reread it and do my layouts.
Okay. Scotty, anything?
I read through the whole script the same way first before I do anything, and then I take basically an 11x17 sheet of paper that I print out basically nine little thumbnail. Basically, I just take the Marvel paper, scan it, shrink it, and I put nine of those on a 11x17. So they end up being, I don't know, 3 inches, 3.5 inches tall, very small. What I usually do is on each page, there's usually a focal panel, or what I would consider the most important panel of that page, and that would be the biggest panel. Lately, over the last year or so, I've been doing a lot of just the grid formatting pages, right, which is everything just in boxes, nothing breaking panel borders. So I will I'll pick that most important panel, and I'll kind of, if it's the fourth panel, if it's the fifth panel, wherever, then I'll kind of leave that space. I'll give a box for that space first, so I know what size. Because you'll kind of see, you've already read the script, you can kind of see what image you want for that, especially the important panel. So I leave a space for that, the most important panel, and then I kind of work the supporting panels in around it. And then, you know, just doodle like stick figure style.
Right.
Lay out the page. I lay out the whole book before I ever start pencils, so I can look at little 3-inch tall, basically almost like storyboard versions of my entire
issue. I lay out
issue.
The whole book, yeah.
You know, the whole book, wow, whole book, no kidding.
Yeah. And that, you know, so that way you can step back, make sure it all flows together. But yeah, there's never do you, I don't think you should just pull out, especially if you're starting out. Now, years in the industry, you know, 20 years in the industry, you've internalized a lot of, you know, internalized a lot of stuff. You could probably go straight to a page.
Yeah.
But starting out, I would suggest everybody take the time to lay the book out small, work it out, try a couple different thumbnails for each page, you know, whatever you need to do to really make sure it all works. Your storytelling solid. Mike was saying, I usually try to do my best to keep the script or draw the pages to what the writers wanted. I will go in and add panels. Sometimes.
Well, yeah.
I'll add panels to help create a few beats between things. Mm-hmm. If I think this is a really important action, I don't think it should go boom, boom. I want it to go boom, rest a few panels, and then you get the reaction. Or I like to do a lot of little weird, quirky, like close-ups on a super close-up on an
silhouettes.
Eye, just to yeah. Well, wait till next.
Another blacked-out figure.
Yeah. So there you go.
I'm Ed Brubaker, and when I'm not killing Foggy Nelson, I like to accidentally delete off my desktop the Around Comics podcast.
Timmy Wood asks, some artists use the traditional borders, while others use it to expand their storytelling technique. Is it easier to take more liberties like that in an independent comic, or would the big companies have a problem with it?
I don't think they really care. Mm-mm. If I went and did squiggle borders around my panels, I don't think anybody would stop me from doing it. It's not a rule.
I just think it's about if it looks good, it looks good.
Yeah.
I don't think you know, if it looks good, it looks good, and it's passable. If it looks like shit, somebody's going to tell you it looks like shit,
yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. I get a call. Yeah. Get a call from the editor.
What the? Fuck
what
are you
the hell
doing?
Are you doing here?
What are you doing? Yeah. I'm just putting borders on.
Yeah. What do you want, man? I just figured a
I'd put flowers in the corner of every.
I'm not strung out. I'm sick.
I took the liberty of putting the script in there in Wingdings.
What's up with that?
If it looks good,
I'm trying something. Come on.
It's artistic expression, motherfucker.
Did you call Alan Moore when he?
If it looks good, they won't say anything. If they have
yeah,
a problem
that's it,
with
that's it.
It.
That actually is
you
true.
Send, like, you spend all day, you're like, you know, I'll send Mike this, like, look at my latest page. And I'll send it. It's nice. Yeah. Thanks.
You got the next one?
Yeah. Thanks. Where's the rest of the issue?
Well, but that is, that really is how it happens. Yeah. You send them, you're just like, oh, I spent all day. I just want somebody to tell me it's good. Yeah. And then they won't say anything.
I don't,
this
I
is
also
acceptable.
Don't, yeah, I don't blame
exactly,
them.
Exactly. That's the worst thing you can say. Yeah. It's like,
this is good.
Mine worse is nice. Oh, it's nice.
Yeah, it bothers you more than it does me. Because
I'd rather just get thanks. But when you say, oh, nice. I'm like, fucking, what am I, a puppy?
You're a nice guy.
You're such a cute page.
Yeah, that's a cute page. I'd like that better.
I'm best friends with this page.
I think the words you're looking for is freaking awesome.
Yeah. Did you just pass out? That's why you couldn't write anymore? It blew your mind that much?
Well, this actually leads right into the next question from Shipwreck. He said, how often are you asked to redo something you've submitted, either by a writer or by the editor? And then he goes on to say, if and when this happens, what kind of turnaround time are you given to make the changes? And do you have any methods to prepare for this occurrence or at least make it easier on yourselves? So how often are you guys asked to make changes?
Well, it happens. It doesn't happen like all the time, but it does happen. I mean, it happens enough that you shouldn't be surprised when it happens.
When it happens. Yeah,
but I always am.
You're like, son of a bitch.
Motherfucker,
don't they
what?
Know? This is him. Don't they know who I am? And
I
then
did,
he clicks the
I
phone.
I did call
I'm like,
Mike up once. They went, not long ago. And I was like, can you fucking believe this? It's so fucking silly.
I think you did have a point, though.
Yeah, no.
Yours
I
was like an out of the norm.
Yeah,
kind
mine's
of thing.
Never about like I. Now, well, honestly, here's another reason. I don't. Until a few months ago, I had honestly, it's been years since I'd ever got a correction back. Like a major, like, redraw
right.
correction. Sometimes it's just, like, not smiling or something, you know, something like that. But I don't ever get huffy about it, like, oh, it's more work. Sometimes, like, I get really invested in reasoning why people should have certain expressions or what kind of clothes or whatever
body language,
those things. Or... So if I truly am, like Norton was saying, I mean, if I truly have a point... I'm going to, you know, let the point be known. That one I lost. I totally lost it. But today, I had another one that I wrote back. I was like, hey, remember that one I lost? You owe me. But this one was
just
because
it
was a good, this one was a really good one. But it doesn't happen that often. I mean, it usually has to be.
Cell phone crazy.
That's like a saxophone over
Stan
here.
Stan DiDio calling Mike.
Shut up!
What are you talking about me?
Why aren't you drawing?
Shield Adam.
Why aren't you drawing those nice pages?
Yeah.
You know what? They're only nice.
Hold on. Real quick on that one though, there are steps that you go through as well before you. I mean, I pencil and ink my own stuff, so I go through three rounds of
approvals,
giving pages. Well, maybe you could call them approvals,
kind,
I guess.
Yeah, they're kind of.
When approvals. You give them your thumbnail, as long as you stick pretty close to your thumbnail, you're never going to have to redraw something.
That's not necessarily true because we've talked about this. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, on that thing.
And that only makes it worse because it's like, you've seen this three
you
times.
You approved it.
You son of a bitch.
Have you ever drawn something and
just
like,
doesn't work for me?
Completely read something really different from the way that.
Yeah,
the,
oh, yeah. But I don't then, tell like, anybody about that because that's embarrassing. I mean,
you read it and they're like, "Why did you draw that?"
I put
recently,
wrong characters there.
Actually,
because I got
in Adam issue 12. There's a fight scene at the end where he fights all of the old Adam's lame villains, and he's the Thinker is one of them. And I think that's who he is the Thinker. And in the original pages, that was actually Dr. Light.
Yeah.
And I had to go back and change him in all those pages because they didn't want Dr. Light to be in there because I'm not exactly sure what the reason was behind it. I don't know if they wanted, you know, maybe he's too he's too dark and
too badass now.
Yeah, we didn't want to, you know, make him part of this. But they actually left the dialogue in there because there was a joke where he punches him out, and Adam's like, "Yeah, I really hate that guy," because it was kind of a joke. It's Dr. Light. Nobody likes him now.
Yeah.
And but they left it in there. But it, even though he's punching out Thinker, so, but you know, that was one of those things where that was called down from up high after the thing had even been done. So it's it. You can't really get mad about it, and they give you time to do it. They understand
that you got to do it. So, Tom,
this is a question from Shane White. One of my biggest problems, because I love working in the medium of comic storytelling so much, is turning it off and doing other stuff. What other stuff outside of comics do you do or want to do more of? What's your theory about why comic creators won't make? Well, this is totally the topic.
Okay. I
work on your abs a lot.
Yeah, my one big ab.
You got one ab?
Yeah,
it's giant.
It's strong.
You should have that checked
I watch
out, actually.
A lot of DVDs.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, I watch.
I thought me and Crank together did. No, but you.
I watch a lot of DVDs. I ride my bike.
Aww.
I go on a bike right.
Soon your Vespa.
I don't know, man. I just hang out with my lady. That sounded all romantic and stuff. You know what we do together? Watch DVDs.
Yeah, or ride bikes.
Yeah, ride bikes.
Bike.
But we haven't even rode bikes together because we just got her a bike. But that's normal weird. People stuff, I guess. I don't know. It is hard to turn it off and on.
Yeah, I don't.
Talk on podcasts about comic books.
Yeah, that's what the fuck I'm here for. I got to turn it off.
I don't turn it off.
You know what I do when I'm not drawing? I call Mike and go,
complain about drawing.
Will you please stop drawing so I can stop drawing?
That's exactly what he does.
I do.
I complain about
it. Yeah, every day
like, why is he always fucking distracting me? Yeah. Doesn't he know I have work to do?
Like today I called him. I said, Mike, look, dude, it's too nice outside. Will you stop working? I'll stop working. I'll just work extra tomorrow and we'll go hang out before the podcast.
And what did I say?
No, I gotta do chores.
Chores?
Yeah. You gotta milk a cow.
I had stuff to do.
All right, next fucking question.
All right, what's your
theory about why
Shane White? You're too fucking pretty.
What's your theory about why comic creators won't make friends with other creators until they've seen their work published?
I've never heard of that. I think Shane needs to see a shrink.
Yeah. Who does he want to be friends with? He's like, why will Alex Ross not go to the movies with me?
I think Shane showed all his cards too early there.
Damn. He went from a real life, hey, what do you guys do when you're not working?
Why won't you be my friend? No, that's not true. I like Shane.
He's very handsome.
How can you not like
him? I actually saw
I'm
him.
In love with him.
Yeah. Yeah. I would date him.
Just
probably.
Four men on a podcast talking about how another man's handsome.
Yeah. I think it's a weird question, but I don't know. When do we run into? I mean, you run into people that haven't been published at conventions, but then they, you know, they usually live all over the globe. It's really hard.
I don't know if that's necessarily true. Yeah. So
I mean, I have tons of friends. I mean, our drawing night is filled with people
that I've never seen anything from.
Yeah, that nobody ever.
Well, at conventions,
but I never talked to them though.
Yeah.
I never talked to them.
You're proving the theory.
So maybe Shane's right.
I'm not your friend.
I always sit at the other end of the table.
Well, I can't be friends with people that make less money than me.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
So I need to see like an ATM.
You were
balance.
Always like that though, even when you were like a waiter.
Yeah. I was working at Ed DeBevick's like,
I can't talk to you.
Will
I can't
you
talk
show me to your ATM or I can't fucking talk to you.
Do you have any stock options?
All right.
Let me see your portfolio.
The next question is from Subtwie. Any writers in particular you'd like to collaborate with?
Oh wow. That's a good question.
Do you have a dream writer?
How about you?
This is going to sound like a joke, but it's absolutely not a joke. Just me.
Gene Roddenberry.
Yourself.
I want to write.
Fuck you, Scotty.
No, I'm not kidding. I said, it's going to sound like a joke.
Well,
but it's not. I'd rather,
you want to start writing. Own,
yeah.
You want to do your own project.
I have always wanted to work with Scotty Young, too. Yeah.
I want to do Scotty Young's tax return. Y'all want to work with
you know what?
Scotty.
I'm getting made fun of because I want to control They all want to work for people. They're laughing like, Scotty. He wants to do stuff on his own. I want to work for the man.
Have you ever turned down one of your pages?
What's that?
Have you ever turned down one of your own
pages? I do give my own corrections. Like, yeah, this isn't good.
This is the wrong character.
I've talked, and we've talked about, I mean, the stuff that you want to do your own project and you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I am at a point, and like I said, I know it sounds like a joke, but I'm being very, very serious. And I'm not saying I'm fantastic at it. I'm saying that I want to start, instead of dreaming about working with other writers who have worked with a million other artists, I want to start the process of doing it myself,
right,
which I got a chance to do in the Legion of Monsters with the Frankenstein. But I would rather
start...
That
was a good story, too.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Yeah. But I'd rather start doing that. I mean, are there writers out there that I like? Very much so. I think that there's a lot of great writers out there, but... I think as a creator, after a while, you're just itching to create everything.
Right. You know? Do you think it's kind of because, when you first got your first job was like straight through Marvel, and you didn't do sort of the, you know, your own first published book on your own beforehand. Do you think that's a little bit of it too? That you still have that itch maybe that.
Well, the itch was I was not. I got into comics in the 90s. You know, everybody bitches about the 90s. Yeah. I can't bitch about the 90s. That's what got me into comics. But the 90s, the whole image craze was creator-owned.
Yeah.
So that's what all I thought comic books were. I didn't ever have the dream to, when I was 14 years old, I didn't think, man, maybe one day I can draw Batman or Spider-Man or Superman, because I thought somebody had that job.
Yeah.
In my mind, comic books were something that you created on your own and you put out into the world. So that's been my dream from the beginning. It wasn't until I got older that I realized, oh, I might have to do the other thing first. Because I'm very realistic. I need to make money as well. You know, I need to pay my bills and support myself. So I thought, well, maybe I'll have to do the other thing first before I get to that. And learn how to do it in the first place. And after getting a chance to work at Warner Brothers and the Cartoon Network on developing stories and shows, it's taught me a lot about crafting stories.
All right. So, Mike, any writers you really want to collaborate with?
Me.
Other than Scotty? Scotty.
Assholes.
Scotty cried.
I have
goals. That's a really hard question. I mean, I could just, you know...
Stan Lee.
I worked with Stan Lee. See, I'm very,
You're
very
huge,
lucky.
Huge, dude.
No, I'm not huge. I'm very lucky. I've gotten to work with a lot of people that, I mean, and I haven't done that much, you know, so I've been able to work with a lot of people that it's just been really lucky to do. So right now I'm doing a script by Roger Stern, you know, and Roger Stern wrote like some of my favorite Spider-Man stories ever, you know, so I'm whoever I get, I'm always, you know, I'm just lucky to have. I just like doing, I don't have anybody in particular. It's like I could just say Alan Moore or something like that.
But
like, you know.
There's nobody out there that you're like actively trying to.
If John Byrne was doing something and they asked me to do it, I would think that, you know, from being a little kid and looking up to that artist so much, I'd be, wow, this is really cool.
Right.
But there's not stuff that I'm just, like, itching to. And like Scotty, I want to do my own thing, but I'm one of those guys that I really like playing in other people's sandboxes.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder to do your own stuff than it is to do other people's, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
So I like, you know, not having that responsibility.
Because I've spent all my time going from just being the penciler to then taking on penciling and inking, and then pencil inking and coloring, to then writing was the next thing. So I've spent all my time inching towards that the same way, where I enjoy. Mike said he really likes playing in the sandbox, and while there's probably writers out there that I really, really love to read, I almost feel that would I have the same appreciation for it? Work, you know.
I'll give you the script book to Leave Extraordinary Gentlemen, and then you draw it.
And Alan Moore would throw a goddamn hissy fit like he always does. This was fan fiction, and I fucking hate it. I don't want my name attached to it.
The Scotty Young version of Leave Extraordinary, which anyone could do because you can get the entire script book. So
why hasn't anyone done that? Actually? You do it, Caters.
Yeah, because stick figures.
I don't know. All right, our next question comes from Papercut Dan. Everybody said
more than one, probably.
Yeah, he's got a few here. We're going to start editing a little bit here. We have so many questions. We're going to kind of try and weed out some that we have either are going to go over or they kind of are redundant. But his question is, how detailed do you like the scripts that are sent to you?
Hmm. Mike?
How detailed? I guess the regular amount of detail. Most people I've worked with all work with full scripts, which is basically like a movie script. They describe the scene of that page, then they break the page down into panels, and then they have the dialogue of what's being said in that panel. Now, all of that can change once they get the art back and they'll redo stuff. Mm. But that's basically what's going on. I like that. Right now I'm doing two stories right now that are all from Marvel style. Which is nothing, it's...
old Marvel style. That style is not really in existence anymore.
A lot of people don't use it, except for people that have been working for, like, 30 years.
Right.
And just so happens the people who are writing these stories that have been working for, you know, over 30 years. So.
Which, real quick, for people who don't know what Marvel style is, it's
Marvel
basically
style
just
is,
a plot.
It's a plot.
Like, and almost prose form.
Yes,
almost
that's exactly what
prose
it is.
Form, yes.
Each of the pages I get is pretty much a paragraph of what's happening on that page. And it's up to me to break that down into the actions that are happening in each individual panels. I prefer the full script mainly. I discovered that from working on these Marvel scripts because I like knowing what the characters are saying to each other so I know what to draw on their faces. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, at least the little bit of feedback I've gotten to my work over the years is that I do good facial expressions. I do good character interaction. And that's really kind of hard to do when you're kind of guessing what they're
going
to
say.
They're doing.
Yeah.
So I like the full script method. So.
I like Mike, I like when I know what the characters are saying. You know, I want the full conversation. I don't necessarily always – I don't mind it, but I don't necessarily always follow it if – I don't need you to tell me exactly where the camera is going to be because sometimes I think that's part of the fun of the job of the artist is to be able to set up that really good shot. So I'll play with that a lot. Mm-hmm. Working with somebody like Zeb, being really close and understanding each other so well, that was very, you know, he gave me a script where the panel description was not wide angle from above, you know, this angle. It was more just like, so-and-so talks to so-and-so, and here's what they say.
You literally
you know.
Had to fill in
that
with the
does
so-and-so.
Change. I mean, when you do work with somebody that you know, like this, that happened with me and McKeever. Yeah. I mean, when you do work with somebody that knows you and you know them.
And they trust
they
you.
Tend to,
and you like each other's stuff as well. Yeah.
I mean, there have been occasions where I get a script from Sean and I draw something, and he ends up taking stuff out because I drew what he wrote in there. He's like, well, I don't need to say that now because he drew it.
Right.
Because you're kind of working on that kind of almost, it's not psychic, but
no,
it's
but
definitely,
you're in tune with one another.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
His next question was, can you talk about the mindset you have when it comes to drawing a comic book cover opposed to the sequential art inside a book?
Well, sure. I mean, it's definitely night and day. You usually have I usually have a little more time for a cover. And a cover is really about taking one piece of paper and it's all about composition and creativity, you know, and making it as strong as images it can be one drawing, as opposed to an interior where, you know, a page can have anywhere from 4 to 8 panels on it with who knows what's going on in there with, you know, cropped heads. And, it's definitely a different ball game. I mean, I think you can see in the industry people that are amazing at covers and not so much on the interiors. Interiors involve, like we were talking about before, facial expressions and body language and attitude and storytelling and camera angles. Cover really just involves the most important thing is composition. I mean, sometimes I wish in comics it was a little bit more important, but color theory and color harmony and things like that, it's very, very important for the cover. On the interiors, you read through it so quickly that sometimes, you know, while I want the colors to be perfect most of the time, but the cover to me is, it's really, really important to have a good grasp on.
Well, what sort of time constraints do you have on a cover as opposed to, I mean, do you feel like if you work on a cover, you have more than enough time to oh, get yeah. the type of cover you want.
Like, oh,
you
know, sure, yeah. I mean, you have basically a full, I mean, you turn in your cover for previews. I mean, I'm doing covers for Iron Man, Marvel Adventures Iron Man, New X-Men, and Cable Deadpool, all alongside of doing the monthly book. But I get to do those covers once a month, as opposed to doing a page every day. So I have all month to sit around, and, you know, each day when I'm done with my pages, I'll do a couple ideas and come up with a couple concepts for the covers and color comps and what kind of mood I want the covers to be. So there's definitely a lot more time, I think, that you get for, I mean, obviously, for one drawing as opposed to 22 pages. What do you think, Mike Norton?
No, you're right.
God damn, I mean, right, I'm right.
I mean, that is night and day. I mean, the cover, there's a science to drawing a cover. And a cover is not a splash page. A cover is a cover. And, I mean, even with a splash page, you're still telling a story, so there are things that you can take liberties with. A cover, you have to tell a story in one, essentially one panel. And even on top of that, it has to be dynamic. It has to be aesthetically pleasing. It has to follow the rules of, you know, composition and stuff like that. It's very tough to do a cover.
Right.
You know, I've only done a couple, and I've done several, but I mean, I don't do the majority of covers on the books that I work on. So I mean, I believe, you know, LeDron does the covers for Adam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think
those are
amazing covers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Sure.
And he's only working from like a paragraph description of what's going on in that issue. So I mean, it's just like,
well, a lot of times with like covers like LeDron's covers, it's the compositional skills of what's on it and like how it looks.
Exactly.
Like the actual nuts and bolts of how it looks plays much bigger role than, let's say, like it has to tell necessarily a specific.
Well, think about it. Yeah. I mean, he gets this paragraph description of what's going on in that story, and it's up to him. It's like, I've got to come up with some fantastic scene.
Which I think he's done extremely well.
Exactly, is what I'm saying. He's just coming something out of his head, and he doesn't even really know what's going on in that issue. And it's just, that is really hard to do, so.
Hi, I'm Steve Rude the Dude, and you're listening to Around Comics.
Let's see, what was next? Vorpal Keith, he said, what are some of the materials you use in terms of paper, pencils, etc.?
Well, the Marvel and DC both send you paper, so, I mean, for the actual pages. It's basically just Strathmore Bristol board.
Yes.
Pencils, man, I'll tell you what, I myself, and I think every artist on the planet has been searching since the beginning of time for a magic pencil, the one that makes you draw the best.
I like the one, the one that draws for you.
Yeah, I literally go to the art store once a week to try and find the magic pencil.
Do you really?
Oh yeah, I really think.
Because I you're kind of like my scout. You go and you do it, and then I say, what's good? And then I order what you got.
Yeah,
if you would say, I'm not going to the store.
For me, I know that. It's just like anything, right? If you're a runner or you play basketball or you skateboard, you think when your board gets old and ratty, you think all of a sudden if you buy a new skateboard, you will be able to 360 kickflip over
it'll
a car.
Get better because that's the thing that's holding you back.
I think it really all comes down to the desire to be better. And if I can get a different kind of pencil, now I do think I am definitely a person who thinks the tools help you get closer to the kind of drawings you want. Whether, you know, depends on, I'm very heavy-handed and I scribble a lot, so I need a softer lead that allows the pencil to move around on the paper a little smoother without having to tear it up.
Right.
I need it to be softer so it'll erase, because I do scribble a lot. It really just all depends. I don't think there's any. I know every how to draw comic, you know, every how to draw comics thing is always telling you, draw with a 2H and blow, you know, there's just no right or wrong. It's whatever you're comfortable with. Draw with a, you
they
know, draw with a goddamn balloon
people.
Filled
they
with.
They got money from the 2H people to say.
But it was 2H grade, dumbass.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know. Stupid fucker.
No, but that's a good point though, because they you do read that in those books.
Every book.
And I went and I did that, and I'm just
and
after
terrible.
A while. It took a while for me to get to realize this. this is not working for me.
It's like drawing with a diamond.
It is.
Yeah.
And I know people that use like 4-H and
stuff. Joe Quesada,
4-H. For 4-H, how do you even see the line when it's on the paper? Because there's really nothing coming off.
Yeah.
So what do you guys use?
I use just a regular HB.
I draw.
Which is kind of the mid, just a regular pencil that you would use.
Yeah, number two pencil.
Yeah, it's a number two pencil.
I use a B. Which is
even softer.
It's two levels softer than that. There's HB, F, and then B. B is really soft. It gets really dark if you want it to be, but it also just glides across. And for me, it really helps if you have to draw fast. Like right now, I'm doing books a little quicker than I'd like to do. So if my lead, it's all stupid little OCD type things, but I figure if the lead moves faster, I finish faster.
You're drawing faster.
Really, if it's a hard lead, it takes longer to put the line down because it's hard and you can't see it.
If
I have to go over the line three times to see it, then that's three. Then imagine 2,000 lines.
Do you use blue line pencils at all to lay stuff out?
I used to until actually he turned me on to colored pencils, which are kind of the same thing. I mean, they're essentially, because it used to be people would use the colored the blue line
for shooting because
it didn't show up,
right?
But with scanners the way they are now, it doesn't matter what you use as long as it's
a
different color.
Yeah. It could be purple, green, it could be anything.
Yeah, I just use a colored pencil. It happens to be blue, but I could use purple or orange or whatever.
And it's all about, you use the blue pencil, like you said before, it was about getting rid of it when you used to have to shoot plates. Now, you use that colored pencil because you're probably going to pencil over it, so you need a lighter contrast, you need a lighter color to work out your structures before you go in with the final pencils.
Yeah.
And again, those colored pencils are soft. Like I was just saying, they allow you to get a little free. They keep that energy into the initial drawing. You want a lot of energy at the beginning because every step is going to deaden your drawing a little bit by little bit by little bit.
That's true.
So you get that. For me, the blue pencil at the beginning allows me to get the most energy. And it's all subjective. I mean, I'm comfortable with it.
Right.
So it works for me. Some people hate the blue pencil. Some people use the automatic lead. Like Mike before used the lead holder blue.
Yeah, I used to use lead holders.
And then he was like, I don't know, maybe I'll try your wooden pencil. I gave it, and he ended up really liking it. So there's no right or wrong art tools, man. It really is just what you feel comfortable with.
Try out different things to figure out what works for you.
Yeah.
What's going on?
This break is brought to you by Mountain Dew. do you have a say? This is from S. Rockwood. Do you have Do you have a say as to where the lettering is placed on your page? Given the opportunity, would you ever consider doing your own lettering?
Oh, I've done my own lettering. Yeah. I will not do it again.
I'd rather shoot myself in the goddamn cock than letter my own stuff.
Here's the thing about lettering. It is, I mean, letterers will tell you all day long that it's an art unto itself. And yes, it is. But it's a fucking annoying art if you're doing it. Yeah. It's just like, I do not want to be doing this. Yeah. I mean, you to do it well, you have to think. And the last thing I want to do when I've gotten to the lettering stage of my comic book is think.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really hard to do.
You have to be wired into that mindset.
Yeah, it's graphic design, and the majority of graphic design is problem solving.
Yeah.
And I don't enjoy problem solving, which is why I'm not a graphic designer anymore.
Which is why it's going to be interesting when you try and get out of that glass box at the end of the night.
Exactly. We put handcuffs on you and hidden the key somewhere else.
Our next question comes from Yorko. And I think Yorko's a
He-Man's sidekick?
His cousin to Orko.
Oh. Orko.
How do you see your first pro assignment in comics in perspective? Does it hold up well?
No.
Retrospect, is that what?
Like looking back at your first work, does it?
Well, my first series at Marvel was I had a few issues before this, but my first mini series was Spider-Man: Legend of the Spider-Clan, and people for some reason enjoyed it. I look back at it now and I can't figure out why, but it was a perfect example of I looked back at it, saw like if I could only redo that with all the stuff I've learned over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked to Marvel, and I got to redo it.
Really?
I mean, not the same story, but that and that came up.
Yeah,
the one shot this year that came out in Spider-Man Family was my chance. I literally said, I love doing that book, but I was not good enough to do what it could have been. So can I at least do, you know, can I do another one shot of it? And they're, sure. So, and I was so pleased with it because I think any artist, I mean, when you look at something that happened 6 months ago, sometimes a week ago, mm-hmm. you're literally going, what the fuck was I on?
Well, and I think that's just a sign of you learning and growing and as an artist. And if you look back and, you know, you certainly don't want to look back at stuff and go, wow, that was great. What
Mike,
the fuck happened?
That's so much better than what I'm doing now. Mike looks back at his old stuff and gets a semi. He loves it.
Mike looks back at his stuff from last month and he hates it.
From today.
Yeah,
from today. He just finished and he throws up.
I feel the same way about my first project as I do about the Crankcast. I'm glad I did it, but I really don't want anybody else to see it. You know? I loved the process of it. At the time, I was learning so much looking at it. Disgusting.
Yeah. Isn't that the worst, though, when you're sitting at a convention and someone brings up like a stack of books from 6 years ago? And
oh, totally.
And you're so happy and
I almost want to say, hey, I can do better now.
Yeah. Let me redo that.
Let me redo the whole series for you. Call me.
Yeah. I'll redo this for you. Yeah. The next question is from Hawk. H-O-C-K. Is there anything that writers have done in their scripts that bother you or make it harder? Anything they've done that you like and made your job easier?
I think we mentioned already about writers that have 15...
Well, glazed over it. Explain that a little bit. Maybe some writers are listening. Potential writers are listening.
Hey, writers, stop doing this.
Yeah.
I've had writers... These are really good writers, too, by the way. I mean, people like to read their stuff. And they'll end up putting, like, 15 panels on a page.
Sean McKeever.
No. Sean McKeever is probably... I mean, I'm not going to kiss his ass because that's the last thing his giant head needs. But he really knows... He thinks about his scripts before he sends it off to an artist. You can tell he's thought about what it's going to look like.
He's going to have this played over the intercom with Bob Evans.
Yeah, exactly. That's awesome. But I've had writers that'll put, like, 15 panels on a page and... three completely different actions going on in each panel.
It's the classic open the door and walk through it.
Exactly. Yeah. And these writers are usually people that aren't adjusted to comic book storytelling. They've either come from like a movie background
or animation or something like that. Prose, I mean novels.
Yeah. Or yeah, exactly. So I mean, it's not that they're bad writers, they're just
They're obviously getting used
to the format.
Right.
So that's kind of annoying. I mean, but...
Well, it makes it frustrating and very hard to try to accomplish what they intend.
Yeah.
Because you want to serve the writer and the story.
Exactly. Because
and you find yourself at a roadblock of going, one of your actions that you intend to have here is...
Impossible.
Has to get sacrificed.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. It's just like, yeah, I don't want to do this, but you're making me do this.
Yeah. And I love you. Why are you making me hurt you?
And then on the opposite...
Call up crying.
Yeah.
Why are you making me do this?
On the opposite side of that, like he's saying, I mean, like I said before about like guys like McKeever or even, you know, like Jay Torres, who I've worked with, it's just like guys that you've worked with so much that you don't even need to... You already know what they're going to do, so it's just like... I do this, and it's like, why? We don't even need to talk to each other. We already know what we're going to say.
But I think visualizing the page, you know, for a writer that can visualize what the actions and
comic book writers that they okay, it's so important for a comic book writer to not think like a comic book. This is going to be weird to say to not think like a comic book writer. To you know, that have outside influences to know how to write,
mm-hmm.
but when they're formatting, for them to actually see the comic. In their head is so important because that's what they're writing for you. You know what I'm saying? And
they're not writing a book; they're writing a script, and
exactly.
it has to be followed.
Just like
it's
you wouldn't write a book that way.
That's why I'm always impressed with guys like when I read. I've told Sean this before, but like McKeever and Brian Vaughn actually write very similar in the way that they write. They're very visual. You can tell that they've seen this scene
in their head.
Yeah, you know. And so it's very easy
to follow them.
To follow them.
And that's the way it should be.
I mean, think as the artist as well, though, I think more artists should take up-and-coming artists, artists already in the game, should also put a little bit more worth into what they do as well. As I always think, as the artist, I am 50% of the storytelling team. I'm not just the person, you know, I'm not just the last 5%. It's definitely a collaborative effort. So while sometimes it annoys me when I find those kind of things that Mike brought up in a script where it's the open the door and walk through it and grab the gun all in the same panel, I find that to be one of my challenges as the 50% of the storytelling team to figure out a way to either, usually it's break it all up, you know, and I'm not afraid to add more panels to a page. I mean, a lot of artists only want 4 or 5. I actually find I don't care how many panels are on there as long as what's needs to be told is told. But I don't think sometimes you can't be such a slave to the panel number or the script to where you're going to find, because you'll just frustrate, like we said, you'll just frustrate yourself to death by trying to be so much a slave to what they wrote.
All right, next is Ryan Stegman, and he said, when incorporating new things into your personal styles, is it something that you consciously do, or does it sort of happen through osmosis?
I highlighted the hard question. Yeah, I'll let Scotty do this, because he knows.
Okay, what was it again? I'm sorry.
Ryan Stegman, another good-looking question.
When incorporating new things into your personal styles, is it something that you consciously do, or does it just sort of happen through osmosis?
I think it's both. I've gotten asked the style question a lot over the years, and it's something that I always feel that I know when at some point or another as artists we all found an artist that drew a certain way, and at one point or another we tried to draw like that guy. We're all guilty of it. I don't want to say guilty because that makes it sound bad. I mean, it's not a bad thing. It's just
your influences.
It's what you do to learn how to draw. Yeah, but your natural style comes from, I think, everything. That's why when people want to draw comic books, I think it's important to have other creative influences as well, not just comic books. If you're a comic book artist and you want to learn how to draw comic books, you can't just learn from other comic books. It becomes too incestual. Mm-hmm. It just all becomes kind of retarded versions of each other. And style is something that just comes naturally depending on what, you know, music you like or what your lifestyle is. Then when starting to change that or add things to it, it really just, like for me personally, I think it just comes down to I just get in the mood to try new things. And like lately, for the last 2 or 3 years, I've been doing this complete, you know,
different
clean cartoon style. And in this last year, all of a sudden I've went the other way, where I'm still drawing with a cartoon base, but then I'm going over top of it with crazy loose ink and brush and watercolors and trying paints and doing textury stuff. So it really just comes from a desire to learn more about art, to express myself in different ways. Or I mean, it's really just I am a person in all parts of my life, not just comics, that wants to try new things all the time. And sometimes I'm happy and sometimes I'm not.
I mean, to sort of answer the question, do you think it's conscious that you try to do something different, but what comes out is probably more maybe instinct or natural or you know what I mean? As far as you made the conscious choice to go, hey, I'm going to try something different.
Oh, yeah.
But what ends up on the page isn't necessarily.
A perfect example is the Cable Deadpool covers, which if anybody has seen those, are very, very different from any work that I've put out in the last couple of years. Now, the very first one that I did like that, very texture-based one, I did a quick doodle. I put it into the computer with full intentions of creating a digital oil painting, a very smooth rendered oil painting. That's what my intention was. I was trying something different. and then it ended up looking like, you know, like a goddamn Nine Inch Nails video at the end of it. It was nowhere close to what I wanted to happen. It was a complete accident and came from frustration of not being able to accomplish what I had in my head. But it just so happened that whatever came out, I was like, this is kind of fucking cool. I don't know if anybody, and I didn't actually do it for cover. I was just doing it for fun. I happened to send it to Marvel and say, no big deal if you don't like this, but I thought, hey, what do you guys think? And they were like, oh, shit, you know. And so now I've done, you know, 6-7 covers like that out of me trying to be Alex Ross or something. You know what I mean? Like, I went completely a different direction. So what do you think, Mike?
This is Mike? Like another 2-hour show here for this for me.
This is where Mike and I are on definitely different sides of the spectrum.
The question of personal style for me is like some. I mean, this is the kind of shit that artists cut their ears off for. I mean, seriously.
By the way, people need to see Mike's sketchbook too, because Mike has about a million. He doesn't give himself credit for this, but he has like 6 trillion styles. And he's fucking a badass.
And that's seriously the root of my problem, is I've spent so much of my career trying to draw like other people because I've been filling in for other people. Mm-hmm. I change, like, on a daily basis, I look through a comic book and I say, oh, wow, that's really cool. I really want to draw like that. That I really don't know how I draw. Although there are guys like Tim Seeley or friends of mine, who say, oh, yeah, I can tell a Mike Norton page when I see it.
Right.
Like, really? Because I can't. And I really am the worst person to ask this question to, just because
I can see it a little bit with the Adam.
It's like a huge quest for me to find that in myself. Because, I mean, I definitely have core influences from growing up that I emulated and I think are still very basic building blocks of the way that I draw. But on a daily basis, I decide, well, I'm going to draw like this today.
Well, I think also it's like a little bit of, like, if you ask anybody who does anything, like, where does what you come from, what does your output come from? Like, no, I think people have a hard time separating themselves from, like, thinking, like, well I ripped this, I did this,
exactly.
I did this.
Exactly.
But it doesn't look like it, but that's how, you know,
you know, I'm either too close or too far away a lot of times, and I'm definitely overcritical about this stuff. So I think if there's anything like a major mission in my artwork right now, is to try and find a happy balance between, you know, how I want to draw and, you know, I want to be able to get to that point, which I don't think I've found. And I don't know if you do find it, then it's over, you know, because
you hit one.
This is your style.
You'll hit one spot. Like I said, hit the cartoony thing, do that for a couple of years, feel pretty comfortable with it. It's time for the next thing.
Well, I tend to be one of those guys that I start doing something like that. And then I'm thinking, am I being too cartoony? Maybe I should shift gears on purpose.
Right.
So I need to find, it's essentially, you know, this is why, like I said, my artists cut off their ears. Why are all artists crazy? It's because they're fucking talking to themselves all day. Yeah. and this is why. I'm just trying to make peace with myself, essentially.
Well, it's a mixture of desire to do one thing. It's a mixture between desire and fear.
Desire
to accomplish one thing, and you're afraid to... I mean, we're all afraid to try things.
He's putting it in words that I can't say because I'm from Tennessee.
Yeah, I don't know how to talk. I don't know how to talk so good.
You got the next one there?
What's the next question, Tom Cayes?
That's another one from Ryan Stegman. How much time would you guys say you spend in a sketchbook? I mean, sketchbooks is an abstract, so if you're drawing on typing paper and throwing it away or whatever... whatever that counts, but how much time would you say you spend practicing or learning new techniques?
Well, we just talked about that too.
Yeah.
All right.
I didn't really even start until recently.
Well, I do want to say this for up and coming artists, because I've done a lot of wizard schools and done, you know, talking at colleges and stuff. You need to spend more time doing bad drawings than you do good drawings.
That's true.
When you see people that want to become comic book artists, you see their portfolios, the first thing that I usually noticed is they don't spend enough time practicing the underlining stuff. They look at a finished printed comic book. They don't ever realize the 12 steps it took to get to that finished drawing.
Yeah.
You need to be able to spend more time not worrying about hitting some home run with a giant finished drawing. You need to have thousands of little gesture drawings and doodles. So you should spend more time in a sketchbook than you do on a finished page. The page should be the very last part of the equation, not the first.
Well, Speaking of the steps of getting a finished page, Equinox has some questions about inking. And he's got four, but I'm going to combine them into one large question about inking.
Bring it on!
What kind of creative input, if any, do you provide to your inkers? Do you find that your drawing style or level of detail changes if you know a particular inker will be working on your pencils? Do you prefer to ink your own work? And he's noticed a lot of young pencilers have adopted more open line style to accommodate today's advanced coloring techniques. Do you think about the coloring while you draw?
This question was made for Scotty, so I will answer.
First, I worked with an inker for a couple years. My first inker, I really liked working with him. We were friends.
Who was that?
His name is Joe Sung.
Okay. And what project was that?
Part of Spider Clan and the Human Torch.
Okay.
And then Rick Ketchum I worked with on Venom.
Oh, wow.
And I enjoyed Rick's inks. And after that, I had gotten better at the drawing side of things. So it was going quicker. So I thought twofold. I would like to get better at inking, so I'll start inking myself, and I want to make more money. Right. So if I can double my paycheck by inking my own work, I didn't know till later that it would actually become quicker because I didn't have to draw as much because I can lay down a basic structure and then ink, do a lot of the drawing with the actual ink pen.
Yeah, right. The
whole process for me became quicker. So I prefer myself to ink myself, and I've been doing it for the last 3 years now. So it's been a long time since, and I did work with an inker on an issue of New X-Men because we thought it would go a little quicker, and I felt bad for him because he's a really good inker, but I'm a freak, control freak. So I probably put him through more shit than he deserved.
I was going to say, I mean, it's got to be difficult to, like, you know, spend this time penciling a page and then handing it to someone else to lay the inks on, unless it's someone you have a relationship with, you know what they're going to do, you know what I mean? It's like, at some point, does it get a little scary sometimes?
Scary. I hesitate to even answer this question because, you know, those inkers are out there.
Yeah. And they're waiting to fuck you over,
well,
Mike.
You know, well, certainly, and it's not, you know, not to try and, it's like, here's your art, and then give it to someone else to change. You know, I mean, that's the way I look at it. It's like, regardless of the skill of the inker, I mean, it's going to be changed in most cases, in some way or another, and that just has to be frightening.
It's just a big crapshoot. I mean, you can suggest who you want, and I've done that in the past, and I almost never get the person that I ask for. And, you know,
it'll keep you up at nights, I kid you not.
Yeah, and I mean, so really, you just have to sit there and guess what your art's going to end up looking like. And it goes the same way with colorists, too. You know, it's just like you have a picture in your head while you're drawing this, no matter how vague, of what it's going to look like when it's done. And it never ends up looking like that. And so you really just, it's very much a gamble. You're just kind of hoping for the best case scenario. And fortunately, I've been, you know, more good than bad.
I find that colors to be, whether you draw with the open line style or you put tons of blacks in there, I don't think it matters either way. I always color is almost there in my mind before the actual drawing itself is, because I think that color is a gigantic storytelling.
Show's over.
But I think that color is such a huge storytelling tool that sometimes, because of the speed that we have to create comics, doesn't get the focus or attention that it deserves. I mean, to me, you should never pick up a book and the entire book be the same color palette or the same temperature. I mean, every scene or every location change should have a different temperature, a different color mood. The story should move along with those moods. The mood should take you from A to B with the color, with the tones and the harmony of all that. So for me, and again, that was another thing where instead of being frustrated with other people, I just said, hey, one day can I color? I colored my own cover just to try it. They let me do it. And then was another situation where I just said, hey, do you guys mind if I color my own books?
Right.
And they just said, well, sure, just don't fuck it up. and then I have an assistant. My partner Jean is a fantastic guy, and on X-Men he's pretty much my main. I mean, he's handling almost everything. We work together for almost 3 years now, so it's like I would do something, he'll do something, it'll come out, it's almost identical because,
right.
And he's fantastic. So color is a huge part of it.
All right, well, guys, I got one last question here. We have a bunch more questions that we just can't get to. The show would just end up being too damn long. And but we do appreciate everybody.
Tom's already hitting people.
So
he just hit some.
I don't give a shit. As long as the books come out.
Blah blah blah. Fucking draw.
Yackety yak.
The last question is from Joey Grow. And he said, what's the most important lesson or skill that you learned that you didn't appreciate learning until after?
You learned it.
Wow, that's a good question.
That is weird.
That's why I wanted to end it with that one.
Could you ask it one more time, Alex?
What's the most important lesson or skill that you didn't appreciate learning until later?
Honestly, the biggest one is... making sure that your first priority is storytelling.
That actually was going to be my...
When I first got my first job, because you read comics, and being an artist myself, comics to me were about the art for a long time.
Right.
And all my favorite artists never really drew great books to read. So that's probably plays a big role in why I haven't read a lot of books, because my favorite artists didn't... draw the good ones. But my first couple books, man, the term storytelling did not exist. I thought that every page needed to be I thought everyone... panel needed to give you a goddamn seizure. It had to be so awesome or crazy or in your face. It wasn't till a year or so in where I started, and maybe it was the first couple times I started getting scripts that I wasn't wild about, and actually it started to click in my head, like, oh, the story is important and the storytelling. And then for me, working in animation and working with acting, where you're taking characters and you're making them act and giving them a lot of personality, started to teach me a lot about storytelling, and I became more important to me as I got better. It became more important as well.
Right.
So I think that's the biggest thing that I think I didn't. Not only did I not appreciate it, but I didn't even know to think about appreciating it until after I was in for a while.
No, that's a good point. I'm a little older than Scotty, and plus I got into comics a little younger, and I don't think it changes the fact that when you're a kid, you're attracted to the visuals of the comic.
Sure,
and you are drawn to the giant splash page of somebody crashing through a window or something, and that's what you think comics are. And so that's what I want to draw comics. That really means you want to draw the big splash page of somebody.
You want to draw the shoulder pads and the huge pockets and shit.
And that's really what the 90s were about, or all these kids that grew up drawing that, saying, oh, we're going to write our own freaking comics
now. So we
now.
Can draw whatever we want.
Yeah.
And check it out. And they're like, well, I can't really read it.
That's my school, baby.
You can't write 22 splash pages.
But, luckily enough, I did grow up on John Romita and all this stuff. And, I did, I have, Big Chief writing tablets from the second grade where I was supposed to be writing cursive letters, but I was drawing scene by scene Empire Strikes Back. So I had, believe it or not, a grasp of storytelling.
Right.
But it's as a kid, you want to draw Spider-Man.
You want to draw the cool stuff. Yeah,
so
sure.
It didn't, it was a couple of jobs into it before I realized maybe I should just stick to telling the story.
Well, here's one thing, again, for artists coming. I'm hoping that I'm trying to answer these with people that want to do this one day, keeping them in mind. But for me, I started to notice that when maybe I'd walk away from a page, even this, one of the things I'm working on right now where I had to do it a little quickly, and I'm very unpleased with some of the actual final drawings. Sometimes it doesn't matter to people. I actually had people start liking things better when I started taking storytelling more serious and getting better at that side, to where I actually started to, and then back, bring it all the way back around to the very first question about do you take concessions with your drawing in the time? You do in a lot of the drawing side of things. You just take all the stuff that you're not doing in the drawing, make the storytelling better, and people end up liking it. Usually more.
They read it for the story.
Exactly what it is. I don't even think about that when I show other people.
Right.
And my big deal is if they, and I do this every page, there's a couple of people that I send the pages off to, if they can't tell me what's happening on that page, that's when I go, fuck!
Right.
And I start, I say, well, can you tell what's going on? And, right. and if they don't recite it back to me, right. what's going on, even if it's really complicated, and I'll give them points for, yeah, that's close enough.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. But that's really what I judge it right. on. And, you know, if they say that it looks good, I'm like, yeah, yeah, that's cool. What's really happening? Right. So,
I'm small.
And it goes back to the cover versus interiors thing as well. I mean, that's why I've tried to get it like, you know, 3 cover gigs alongside of a book, because my books are about storytelling and my covers are about doing that other thing that we grew up wanting to do, which is do the big, cool image. You know, if I can do that on a cover, then fantastic. Then I can feel okay about getting in a story that I have to do in an allotted amount of time and just going, here's the best panel that I have within this certain amount of time. It tells the right story. The emotion's right. It's pretty fucking awesome.
That's the most important.
Yeah. It's dope.
So,
all right. Well, guys, thanks so much for joining us today and going over all the stuff that you do, because I know that you know, most comic book fans at one time in their life or another always wanted to either draw comics or write comics or works.
Like
work
Sal, he's crying right now.
He's been crying this whole episode.
I hate both of you.
I hate both of you for your talent.
The episode wouldn't have worked unless the forum posters had posted stuff, so thanks to everyone who posted.
Good, yeah, thank you guys. I mean, honestly,
this is like a whole other show.
Yeah, I wish we would have had time to get to all of them, because everything.
We should just answer them on the message board.
You can do that.
I know
Norton spends all day on the message board. He's all like, I work so much. He has like 60,000 posts.
No.
But no, I'm kidding. But yeah, thank you. Thanks to everybody. They were really, really good questions. The ones that we didn't get to answer were still very good.
And I think
I'll answer them to myself.
We're going to try and do a video podcast at some point with you doing your story.
Yeah.
And maybe we can
come up to the studio and we'll I think
hide
what
all
this
the porn.
What no oh, I don't yeah. hide it. I'll share it with you guys. I think that what this started off as is talking about how to start a page from beginning to end would be much easier and be accomplished in about 15 minutes with a video camera.
Right.
I do this, and then Norton can show you what he does, and
his
takes 3 days though, because Norton goes out to the forest with an axe. He cuts
down
a tree.
Then he starts shaving it off.
And he's a lumber. He's big. He's a lumberjack. So he actually goes out. He puts a beanie on.
I keep it real.
Well, thanks again to all the forum posters. If you'd like to join in on the fun, you can go to our forum at aroundcomics.com, and you'll see Scotty and Mike and bunch of other people there too.
Not if we see you first.
Well, there's that. There's also a few ways you can interact with the show. You can email us at info@aroundcomics.com, or you can reach each of us individually at Sal, Chris, or Tom at aroundcomics.com.
Or Mike at aroundcomics.com.
You can visit us at Comic Space at www.comicspace.com. /aroundcomics.
You can visit
or MySpace.
Just
look up MySpace.
You can visit us at 10beers.com.
Tom has been drinking a lot during this interview.
MySpace.com/aroundcomics.
You can leave us an iTunes review, which is our favorite, according to Chris. It doesn't matter to me.
You can also join our.
To talk about
No. We can talk about it just fine. You can join our friends of the program. Go to Around Comics, and you can download and print out our LCS challenge flyer. Ask your comic shop manager or owner if they'll display it in the store. If they do, send us an email. We'll mention you and the store on the show, and we'll post a link to it on our site. Become a friend of the program today. We actually had a guy that.
Sent us pizzas.
Well, yeah, we had a guy today send us pizza, the Polish enforcer.
And that sucks, because we had already been, we were out getting Mexican food.
Not for me. Thank you, Polish enforcer. I really enjoy pepperoni pizza.
But that was, I don't know where he sent it from.
And you guys ate a whole pizza in like 20 minutes.
Oh,
like,
I had a couple of slices. No, that didn't
it wasn't that
thing.
Big of a pizza.
Polish enforcer.
You could have done better.
Yeah.
But also we had a guy, and I don't have it in front of me, so I don't know his name, but he works in a post office as like a, I don't know if he's a mail sorter or something.
And he shot a bunch of people.
No, and he posted our flyer, because I guess he doesn't have an LCS, so he posted our flyer in the post office. So
that's probably illegal.
Well, it's like on
now
his cubicle. Yeah, now
he's going to post
it in his cell.
Now he's
going to
get in a box with Mike.
inside the tiny glass box.
We'd also like to thank InStockTrades.com for sponsoring this episode.
Waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for
trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices, and remember that all orders over $50 ship free. Whether you're buying an absolute edition or catching up with showcases and essentials, InStockTrades.com is your new best friend. Just hide it from your significant other.
I'd like to thank everybody for joining us today. And also thanks to Mark at Dark Tower for hosting us as always.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Everybody have a fantastic week. We'll be back again on Monday with another new episode. In the meantime, we'll be everywhere in...
Hey, and around comics!
Your fist can't get out of that jar, Mike, can it?
Would like to suggest a topic? Send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member? Email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same. Bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Love you, baby. Yeah. Why you got my love and love?